Guys, your freaking bathroom called. It's time to give it the cleaning it deserves. Get rid of all that junk that's lying around. Freshen it up with some high-quality products from Dollar Shave Club. Members like me will get everything we need for our morning routine delivered right to our goddamn door. Dollar Shave Club has razors, shave butter, shampoo, body wash, and even freaking toothpaste. Everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best. Me? I get an amazing high-quality shave every morning from my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor. It's the best fucking razor I've ever used. Their Dr. Carver's shave butter is fantastic. It goes on so clear, you can actually see where you're shaving. And since Dollar Shave Club delivers everything right to your door, you do not have to waste time setting foot in the store hunting the aisles for razors, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, like some sort of a monster. Clean up your morning and bathroom routine with Dollar Shave Club. They have a daily essential starter kit. You can get it for only $5, free shipping, and you'll even get the 6-blade executive razor. Trust me, I have it. You want this. You will also get free trials of the shave butter, body cleanser, and those one wipe Charlies. Do not sleep on the one wipe Charlies. They're better than toilet paper. Just try it. Then you can keep the blades coming for just a few bucks more a month. Speaking of next month, for a limited time only, use code Frankenstein at checkout to get $5 off your second month of the club. That's code Frankenstein at dollarshaveclub.com to receive $5 off your second month. Join the club today. You won't regret it. I know I didn't. Now let's get on to the show. What's up, guys? Welcome to the William Bragg Experience. It's my first podcast. I'll be doing it alone, though we may have guests in the future, may take calls, may read fan mail that's sent in, that sort of thing. But today, we're gonna be by ourselves here, and we're going to be talking about monster culture. And when I say monster culture, I'm referring to Jeffrey Jerome Combs' essay titled Monster Culture and his 7 theses about monsters and how they are incorporated in the literature and what they mean to us, what they represent, that sort of thing. And in addition to that essay, we're going to talk about how some of those theses relate to Percy Shelley's Frankenstein. There may be pauses at time, because I'll have to switch recordings to make sure there are no pauses as I gather my thoughts, but we're just going to jump right into it. There are 2 theses within this essay that I think work well with Frankenstein. The first is that the monster stands at the threshold of becoming. In Cohen's own words, monsters are our children. They can be pushed to the farthest margins of geography and discourse, hidden away at the edges of the world and in the forbidden recesses of our mind, but they always return, and when they come back, they bring not just a fuller knowledge of our place in history and the history of knowing our place, but they bear self-knowledge, human knowledge, and a discourse all the more sacred as it arises from the outside. He also says that these monsters ask us how we perceive the world and how we have misrepresented what we have attempted to place. They ask us to reevaluate our cultural assumptions about race, gender, sexuality, our perception of difference, our tolerance towards its expression. They ask us why we have created them. Obviously, that last line there in that quote ties directly in with Frankenstein, as Victor Frankenstein created the creature, and the creature wants to know by the middle end of the story why Victor would create something so hideous and ugly that no one wants to be associated with. The second thesis is that the monster is the harbinger of category crisis. In Cohen's own words again, this refusal to participate in the classificatory order of things is true of monsters generally. They are disturbing hybrids whose externally incoherent bodies resist attempts to include them in any systematic structuration, and so the monster is dangerous, a form suspended between forms that threatens to smash distinctions. This quote ties into Frankenstein because the creature is not, he's not a monster in that he's evil and wants to do evil things. Not that he doesn't do terrible things, he does, but he doesn't do them simply because he is a monster. He's not evil for evil's sake. He does them because he can't fit into a category within the world he's been brought into. He is ostracized. He can't socialize. No one wants to be around him. No one can put him in a group, so he's seen as scary. People are afraid, and they see him as dangerous. No matter how he acts, what he says, he'll be seen as dangerous just because he is a creation that is unfamiliar to them. He's alien. They don't understand. How these two theses work together is that the creature cannot fit into a category. First off, because he is ugly, he looks like a monster. Nobody wants to be around him. But secondly, because he doesn't understand social standards. He doesn't understand how people think. He doesn't understand history. He just can't connect with anyone. And with that, but despite that, he wishes to. He wishes to have knowledge. He wishes to become more human so that he can no longer be put in a category of his own, so he can fit in with other categories and live a normal life amongst the people that created him and that he has to deal with. Really, all the monster wants in this book is to have meaningful relationships with others and fit into society. Like the two theses say, the monster stands at the threshold of becoming. He wants to become more human so he can fit into categories outside of his own monster's category. And those categories are, I don't know, just normal humans, friend circles, social circles, things like that. Immediately upon the creation of the monster, Victor realizes he's ugly and he will never fit into a group. And he doesn't even want to be in the same room as his creation. And deep down, the monster even knows that he's different. He's not like others. But he still wants what anyone wants. He wants to have relationships with people. And we see him seek this throughout the book. One of the first times we see this is when he has an encounter with William, Victor's younger brother. He thinks maybe William will be a chance for him to have a friend, but instead William mocks him, makes fun of him, and the monster, being juvenile mentally, he reacts to this mocking from William in a hostile way and kills William. And he frames Justine, another relative of Victor, and that eventually leads to her death as she's convicted and confesses to the murder for some reason, and is eventually killed because of that. This encounter with William was the first time we see the monster get violent. And the monster is not a violent person. Just as is, he's not evil. He doesn't want to hurt others just because. He's not like a He's not like a zombie or something. He's not killing just to kill because he needs to, because he wants to be evil. He killed because he saw something making fun of him, something treating him horribly, and he didn't have the mental capacity to deal with that the way a normal human would. But as the book goes on, he gains more knowledge. He learns how to read. He learns the language. He learns about humans' emotions, human psychology. And he mostly does this through the stalking of a family, Felix, Safi, and Agatha. He eavesdrops on their conversations. He listens to their problems. He reads their books. He learns a lot about how their problems are similar to problems he has, similar to problems Victor has. He thinks they are his best chance to finally fit in with a group, to separate himself from that category, to become like everyone else, to become human. And he musters up the courage to use his language and newfound knowledge that he gained through listening to them to approach them and maybe make some friends. When he does this, he has a what seems like a pleasant conversation with Safi, and it seems as if he's maybe found a group to fit in with, a way to finally separate himself from being a monster. But as their conversation ends and they go their separate ways, when he arrives back at the town in which Felix, Safi, and Agatha were living, he finds that they've ran, they've scattered because of their disgust for the monster, and he realizes that he will never be able to make a connection with any normal humans. He even realized this when listening to them. He saw how attractive they were, how smart they were. He would look at himself in the mirror and he would realize how different he was. It didn't matter what he did, but he tried anyway because it was his best shot, and it did not work out. He was not able to separate himself into a category and become human. The only time he's able to truly connect with a human is when he meets a blind man named DeLacy. And obviously that's the only able person who accepts him for what he is, because he's blind. He can't see what he looks like. And that's all he ever had. The old man is the only person that's ever nice to him. And the young people he was listening to want nothing to do with him and never see him again. Having this experience, the monster knows his only option is to seek some sort of, you know, clarity, closure from Victor. Maybe there's something Victor can do, and he seeks Victor to help understand his situation. And on the way to see Victor after his experience with his family, he again shows that he is a kind creature at heart. He saves a girl from drowning, but a man with her sees the monster and thinks that he is trying to drown her, and he shoots him. Again, just showing no matter what the monster does, he cannot break out of that category of being a monster just because he looks like one. When he eventually finds Victor, he tells him how alone he is, how angry he is, that he doesn't understand why Victor would create him, why he would make him so ugly, make him so alone. As the quote from Cohen, one of the lines from a quote unquote, the monster, they ask us why we have created him. Obviously, he might not have meant in the direct sense that it ties in with Frankenstein, but it still means the same, still represents the same idea within Frankenstein. It just fits perfectly. And through his confession of his sadness about being so ugly and alone and confusion about why Victor would create him, he asks Victor to create him a monstrous female companion. And Victor agrees to do so, but once he creates the monster, the female monster, he kills it because he has second thoughts. And the monster witnesses this murder, and the monster can't take it anymore, and he knows he wants to get revenge on Victor for doing such a horrible thing to him. And that again leads to the monster actually doing evil things. He kills Henry and he kills Victor's future wife, Elizabeth, just out of pure revenge and hatred towards Victor for creating him and then refusing to give him a companion. This tragic story of the monster of Frankenstein and the creature perfectly fits in with those two theses from Cohen. While I think the monsters in most cases in Cohen's essay are monsters that are maybe more evil than the monster in Frankenstein is, it still works, because this monster, he simply wants nothing other than to be like everyone else, to be human, to not be ostracized and sequestered in his own corner of the world alone. He does whatever he can to gain knowledge and understanding of how he can break through that barrier, but no matter what he does, he can't. And it's just because he looks like a monster, and that's what the monster culture is all about. The monsters are different. People are scared of them because the way they look, the way they act. It doesn't matter what they do. As long as they are labeled a monster, they will never be able to be like everyone else and get rid of that label. There are two quotes I really feel encapsulate what frustration the monster was experiencing with his desire to become a human, to form relationships, to fit into a different category other than being a monster. The first is that he says, "Increase of knowledge only discovered to me more clearly what a wretched outcast I was. I cherished hope. It is true, but it vanished when I beheld my person reflected in water or my shadow in the moonshine, even as that frail image and that inconstant shade." He realizes that he's ugly and will never, no matter what he does, will never be accepted because he's gained knowledge. At first, he knew he was different. He knew people didn't like him, but he didn't know why. He thought maybe there was hope, but he's gained knowledge. He knows that's never possible, and this leads him only to ask the question of why he was created. Secondly, he says, "I have murdered the lovely and the helpless. I have strangled the innocent as they slept and grasped to death his throat who never injured me or any other living thing. I have demoted my creator, the select specimen of all that is worthy of love and admiration among men, to misery. I have pursued him even to that irremediable ruin. There he lies, white and cold in death. You hate me, but your abhorrence cannot equal that which I regard myself. I look on the hands which executed the deed. I think on the heart in which the imagination of it was conceived, and long for the moment when these hands will meet my eyes, when that imagination will haunt my thoughts no more. This says that the monster knows that he has actually truly become a monster. He can't live himself with the horrible things he's done because of the way he was treated. And his journey to become human. I think these quotes really show that the monster, especially in this instance in this book, is unique, and that he knows what a monster he is. He wishes it weren't that way. He's frustrated that the circumstances he was brought into led him to do the things he did. And I think that's important in Cohen's monster thesis, because monsters are not always just monsters. They aren't created monsters. They become monsters because of how they interact with the outside world. For instance, when he says that the monster stands at the threshold of becoming, this means that the monster is a monster because he is close to human, but not. He wants to become a human, but because he's so close but not a human, it makes him a monster. And that he's a category, the monster is a harbinger of category crisis, makes him a monster because some people, some things fit in their own categories, but they're not seen as monsters. The creature in this book is put into the category of monster because of the way he looks. And he will never be able to be a part of the normal structure of society. To wrap the podcast up, I want to talk about just a summary what we've talked about. Basically, it's that Frankenstein, or the monster in Frankenstein, is represented by the two theses in Cohen's essay: the monster stands at the threshold of becoming, and the monster is a harbinger of category crisis. The creature in Frankenstein is on the threshold of becoming because he wants to become human. He wants to have the knowledge of the human. He wants to be able to form relationships like humans. But because of the way he looks, the knowledge he gains does not matter. And it only leads him to ask why he was created. And the monster in this book is the harbinger of category crisis, because no matter what he does, no matter what knowledge he gained, no matter how he puts it to use, it won't get him out of his own category, because he is an alien to everyone else and they will only see him as a monster. And that's exactly what Cohen was trying to say in these two theses, is that monsters are monsters because they're put into their own categories, and that they're so close to something we're familiar with that it makes them more terrifying than if they were completely unfamiliar. Something completely unfamiliar we would try and learn about, but something so close to becoming is just seen as odd and weird to others, and makes them a monster and puts them in their own category. Thanks for listening to the William Bragg Experience. I hope this was fascinating to my listeners. That's all I got. 4:38 a.m. Probably should have started. Yeah. All right. Have a good summer, everybody. See ya August 18th, 2019. A new year. Same year. New school year. Yeah. That's how it goes. Gonna go write a reflective essay on this podcast real quick, maybe. Yeah. Yep. Good stuff, man. All right. Tune in for the next podcast to be announced. Love you guys.